The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now a warning that our next item is not suitable for little ears, may contain discussion of childhood abuse and neglect. Tomorrow is International Day of Families, and in Ireland, Thusla is tasked with supporting children and families. Over the past number of months, there have been many news stories about the child and family agency known as Thusla and the work that it does. So what are the agency's obligations and is it able to meet them? Joining me now to talk about all of this is the Thusla CEO, Kate Duggan. Kate, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
First of all, you might outline the task that you've been charged with.
The task, and I think we are delighted to be able to talk today as we mark International Day of the Families, of really the depth and the breadth of the work that we do as an agency. We're an agency that was established just over 10 years. And at that time, we received, you know, around 48,000 referrals. As we look back to 2024, those referrals have increased to over 96,000. And what we see, Pat, is that almost two thirds of those referrals now are where we are responding to families who need support. So not so much our child protection referrals, they're a very important part of our work. But what we are seeing is a growing increase for families who need support, families who want to be good parents, but who are challenged, whether that's to do with the circumstance in which they're living, mental health, addiction problems. And what we respond every day is how we provide those challenges or how we help families address
those
challenges.
How are you called in? Who calls you in?
Yeah, so we have a referral system into Thusla. And as you know, since the establishment of the legislation in 2017, there's mandate reporting. So that's very much around where professionals have a concern around child protection, around the welfare, around the safety of a child. And they come directly to Thusla. But also it's around self-referral. And when we talk about our family support services, that often is self-referral. That is a family who want help from us. And it's very important for me as CEO, Pat, to get that message out there, that we are an agency through our directly funded family support and early intervention services and through the services we fund, like Bernardo's, like ISPCC, community and voluntary services right across the country, that we are here to help and support parents.
Now, is there a hierarchy of response, you know, if a family self-refer and the fact that they're, I suppose, aware enough to self-refer, the nature of that urgency may not be top of your priority list. Whereas if a professional refers and says someone is in physical danger or in danger of emotional, sexual, physical abuse, do they take top priority?
Absolutely. And I think what HICWA, our external regulator, will talk about always is that despite the challenges we may face as an agency, that when there is a high priority case referred to us, like you described, where there's a risk of abuse, where there is an immediate protective response required, those children are dealt with immediately. And so we have a screening assessment where any referral is screened to determine what is the nature of the response that we require. And currently within the agency, because of that really significant increase in referrals, particularly for that early intervention and that family support space, it's very much around us building and increasing our capacity to respond earlier, Pat, and to respond before things come to a point of there being a safety issue. But of course, our statutory obligation, our priority is to respond to those children at highest risk.
Now, you know, I'm sure it's writ large on your desk, what Judge Fotrell said about Thusla. And he discovered there were 900 cases that did not have a social worker, even though that was ordained by the court. What went wrong?
I think if I can talk to that, under the regulations, it's very important that children in care or children who are on the child protection system have an allocated caseworker. And those cases are under the auspices of the court. The court have, rightly so, the obligation to monitor the care that's been provided to those children. And over the last number of years, where we have not had the resources to be able to allocate a social worker to all of those children, the focus has very much been on trying to ensure that we had eyes on those children and that another professional was allocated to look after and to care for that child. But in this instance, what didn't happen, and it should have happened, what didn't happen is that where a care order had indicated that the judge should have been informed if another professional was being allocated.
Are you saying in all the 900 cases there was someone looking after those children, but they weren't necessarily a social worker? Is that your contention?
Absolutely, Pat. I mean, we have a case where under the regulations, the allocation is a social worker. And today, the figure is about 98%. So 98% in children in care would have a professional allocated. In this circumstance, the issue is that we did not notify the court of that. That is disrespectful to the court.
The judge did invite you personally to testify and you refused.
I think it's important to set out the circumstance of that, Pat. We, under our structures, have, you know, devolved responsibility where we have regional chief officers who'd be much closer to the detail of a case. And what I did provide to the court was an assurance that those regional chief officers were available to come in and talk to the court. And I am going to go in and attend to the court once this process is completed. Because, Pat, what I have looked for and what I have done immediately in this case is to make sure that we identified this issue. We brought it to the court's attention. The court rightly were concerned and asked us to make sure that there were no other cases. And so we're in the middle of completing a process to make sure that there are no retrospective, so cases that back over the last number of years weren't returned to the court, and that the judge is now fully informed of all of that practice. And what I can assure you is that any child today who is open to the court, their court orders are being implemented.
I can quote various cases to you. Care place for a girl threatened with being shot. The state had no place to protect that girl. Why not?
I think it's important, Pat, again, to highlight...
This was a drug gang who were trying to exploit this girl.
Yeah. And I think it's important to highlight that as an agency, we currently have 5,800 children in the care of the state. And it is also important to recognise that about, you know, 88 or 89% of those children and young people are in foster care placements, and they are being looked after by, you know, almost 3,500 foster carers, the length and breadth of this country, where they are thriving in their foster care placements. We then have a number of children who are living in a residential unit, that is a house in a community where they are looked after by staff. But there are a small number of children with very complex needs where we find it difficult to respond to the full spectrum of their need. And very often what is looked for in that case is access to a place in special care. And I think what we have been advocating for over the years, we have seen significant investment with the support of our minister and department in our services. We've significant investment in staffing. We've seen new investment in our capital infrastructure. But what we absolutely welcome is the commitment of government now, the new programme for government, for a whole of government response to those small number of children with very complex needs.
Mm. Now, you talk about the special care beds. Mm. There are 26. Only 15 are staffed. Why?
Yes. Yeah, so special care, again, just to give a slight introduction to that. Special care is the most significant intervention a High Court judge can make in granting a special care order, because a special care order deprives a young person of their liberty when in fact they haven't committed a crime. And so the purpose of special care is about providing a short-term, stabilising, secure intervention for a small number of children and young people. And today, as you say, we have 15 young people who are in special care across three of our sites. We have 26 beds, and we are not in a position to open those beds because of inadequate staffing. What I will say, Pat, is that there's a number of developments that have happened over the last 12 to 18 months, which I am optimistic about. That is that we have seen a significant investment in our staffing, but more importantly, we have been advocating and have now received our approval for a new grade of staff. This is very complex, challenging work, Pat.
What's the new grade? Is it higher than social worker?
So social care would be the grade of staff that work at our residential services. And so it is higher than our social care grade. If we talk in monetary terms, it's about 11,000 euros higher than the grade that would be there for staff in mainstream residential services. And we've done a huge amount of, you know, campaigning over the last number of months to seek to attract. We're challenged at the moment in almost a full labour market in getting the workforce that we need to be able to open those additional special care beds. And I suppose we have been literally doing everything that we can over the last number of months to seek to increase. We will be able to increase by one bed But we certainly need to be able to increase by more. But that is solely dependent on recruiting the staff that we need to be able to open those beds.
How many people does it take to staff a bed?
About 16. When you look, Pat...
One bed, 16 people.
In terms of a 7-day week, 24-hour day rotation, what we see is that a number of those young people, because of the complexity of their behaviour, will often need 2-to-1 staffing. It has also been a feature, and we've worked with HICWA over the last number of months, where we've had to bring in close protection personnel into those units, in terms of really protecting our staff and protecting the other young people in those units. These young people have experienced significant trauma, Pat. We're seeing a significant number of young people, you know, in society today who have, you know, troubles with addiction, who have, you know, troubles in terms of significant mental health. And so I did commission a special care expert group, an external group of you know, people with experience in terms of law, in terms of childcare reporting, in terms of guardian ad litem services. And we publish that report next week. And that report talks to the fact that if we are to increase our capacity in special care, if we're to sustain special care at a model, that that is going to require that whole of government approach that is promised in the programme of government, and which we are really seeing the commitment
but
of our own minister.
I'm just wondering how challenging is the lack of resources? I mean, there are those who maintain it's not an attractive job to work as a social worker for Thusla. You talk about those who don't have a social worker may have a social care worker, whereas they might appropriately have a social worker if you have the resources. So how understaffed are you?
It's a couple of different things there, Pat. I think the first thing to say is we are for the first time in the agency now at our funded workforce. We have seen for the first time an increase in the number of social workers and social care workers in our agency. That's because we've worked really hard on how we attract people into the agency. And we've seen for the first time in the last 12 months an increase in the retention of staff within our agency.
So what was the problem
up to
this?
That is not to say. The problem up to this was probably a supply factor in terms of the colleges, that the amount of young people that were graduating with degrees in social work, in social care, receiving their registration. And we've been delighted to progress and influence now an apprenticeship scheme for social workers. We're delighted that with the support of the minister, we have 75 apprentices and social workers, and they're young people with life experience who start work with us on day one of their apprenticeship model and then commit to us within an agency. But that is not to say, Pat, you know, because of what we're seeing in terms of an increased demand, increase in number of referrals, increase in the demand for new services. When we look at our separated children seeking international protection
services.
Okay,
but this is what I'm getting at, that yours is really a demand-led service, but you're telling me that you are constrained by the funding that is given by government. So, you know, you're looking at a huge demand, an increasing demand, and no automatic increase in funding to reflect that demand.
I think we have to acknowledge the increase
therefore,
in funding.
People, kids are going to be left out. The people, kids are not going to be served because you don't have the money or the resources to do it.
I think I think there's two things there, Pat. I think it's very important to say that we did receive 145 million additional funding from government last year, and that very much was to support our response to separated children seeking international protection and children with more complex needs. But also, I think it's important to say that what we do need is we need investment in now our child protection, our family support and early intervention services to meet the demand that is growing, that is out there. And I think, you know, HICWA, again, as our external regulator, looked at 10 of our services recently and have that report published on their website. What they have assured me is to tell me that those who are highest priority are being responded to. With the resources we have, we are responding as best we can. But yet, our staff have that very significant challenge every day, Pat, right across the country, where they are balancing resource and demand, where they are seeking as best they can to mitigate the very significant risks that they are dealing with communities right across the country.
But when we look at the investigation into the Midlands region, HICWA said that the information provided by Thusla wasn't even accurate.
I acknowledge that, obviously, that HICWA report, and that was a concerning finding. I think just it's important to talk about that did relate to a resourcing issue in the Midlands, but it also
related... But it failed
related,
children. I mean, that's the point they make, that children were failed. children who needed help at a particular period didn't get it.
Didn't get it because the data wasn't there and the data wasn't established onto our system. I think, again, what's very important to highlight is that we had been a paper-based system, Pat, and I think it's important to say that now we are the only child protection service and agency in Europe that now has a single digitalised child record. And so what the purpose of bringing in that record was to mitigate that exact risk that you talk about there in terms of making sure that we have one record on a child, that we can see all of the services involved with the child, and we can make sure that children don't fall through the cracks. That is not to say that with the demand we are facing as an agency, we are still challenged to provide the high quality services we would want to every child in this country. And with that growing demand, we'll require ongoing investment. And we're confident, we know that the Minister, our department colleagues, share that desire for increased investment and obviously working with them now through budget 2026 estimates to secure that.
Now, you have got to the position of CEO of Thusla, working already in the agency. You weren't someone new, just parachuted in from outside. So you know the agency inside out. What about the damage that was done to the reputation of the agency because of the Grace report?
I think the first thing to say, Pat, is it's to absolutely acknowledge that Grace was failed. And I think any of us who read that report found it very difficult to read. And I certainly found the fact that Grace's voice wasn't reflected in that report very difficult. You know, and many of your listeners know, that the protective systems were not there to protect Grace. And the agency was established in 2014. And the reason that agency or our agency was established was because of cases like Grace. It was that, you know, obviously indication of the need for a standalone, single child protection agency. And that's what Thusla is. We're an agency, as I said, 10 years old. We're an agency that has been established to protect the welfare of children. And what we do know now is that because of changes in legislation, because of our HICWA and our external assurances, because of the requirements that we are under in terms of our statutory obligations, that services are safer today. But we cannot be complacent. We have to be vigilant, Pat. Unfortunately, there are people in society who are inclined to harm, to abuse and to neglect. And what I suppose the message that we are trying to get out there all of the time is that, you know, this needs to be everybody's business. Where somebody has a concern, they have to talk about it. If I look at,
they have the assurance that they decide, I'm worried about a particular child in a particular household situation or whatever, have they got the confidence that if they contact you, that there'll be the resource there to deal with that situation? That's the question.
I think it's two things. I think if we look at our most recent HICWA inspection in fostering, which happens to be in Donegal, we were compliant with all of the standards around that. And that gives me a level of assurance as CEO. That doesn't mean that we don't remain to be vigilant. We know that HICWA tells us that in, you know, cases where there's the greatest priority, the greatest level of risk, that we are responding appropriately. But we certainly have to make sure that where anybody in society has a concern, particularly about a vulnerable child are a vulnerable adult, that they come and talk to us about those concerns. Because it is only when we all recognise our responsibilities to those children that we keep them safe.
Before I leave that Grace report, do you think it would be appropriate for the author of that report to be questioned about it?
I actually don't want to be drawn into that argument, Pat. I think that is a report that was commissioned independently. I think
would it be helpful to you, for example? I mean, that's your job as head of Thusla. Mm-hmm. Would it be helpful for you to have it all teased out? Because there were so many people, both political and others, people in the social worker field, who were critical of that report, saying that it left more questions than answers in some ways.
I think it did about Grace, but I think certainly I have enough to know from that report where the protective systems failed to protect Grace. And I was certainly from the learnings that we have taken from that in terms of making sure that that vigilance remains and that we continue to work with HICWA as the external regulator to see how we can and do as best that we can protect those children.
I'll read you some of the texts coming in. Children in care are being failed. The system is on its knees. 2-year waiting lists for the Children's Disability Network teams. Secure care often goes on way longer because there are no step-down units. The whole system is in crisis. Children experiencing multiple foster placement breakdowns as children and foster carers are not being supported adequately.
I think when I listen to those messages, that the word that does feature for me, Pat, is that complexity of need. And I think in terms of accessing children disability teams within the HSE, obviously, we hear, I met recently with over 500 foster carers, and many of those foster carers talked to me about the challenges they faced in terms of the complexity and need of the young people within their care, particularly in relation to mental health issues.
And were they telling you they didn't have enough support?
They talked about the fact they found it difficult to access services. And if I look at what we've done within the agency to try to seek to start to address that, it is about being establishing a peer support role in terms of people being available to talk to foster carers. But also we have now established our own TUSLA therapeutic teams. And we are just starting that. We're just starting to build that resource. But what that is, this is about the early intervention path. Any new child coming into care gets a multidisciplinary assessment to identify and inform their care planning. But we have only six of those teams currently.
I'll read you another text. I'm a hospital social worker. I strongly advocate that TUSLA social workers get paid more than other types of social workers, as the work they do is much more challenging than other social work areas. This in turn would attract and retain TUSLA social workers. I'm based in Dublin, and I was only having a conversation yesterday with a fellow social worker working in TUSLA who told me that so many newly qualified Dublin-based TUSLA social workers don't stay in Dublin for long as they can't afford to live in Dublin. Why aren't we offering public sector workers extra money for working in Dublin like that happens in London? It's not rocket science. Do TUSLA have responsibilities for underage migrant children who disappear? I hope so. Do you have responsible, you know, if it's reported to you that a migrant child has disappeared?
Absolutely. So in terms of the responsibility, Pat, where we know that a migrant child or any child is missing, our absolute duty is to report that to the Gardaí immediately. And very important that until we know a confirmation of where those young people are, that that remains open as a missing report and open to make sure that the guards can continue to seek to locate that child.
Please ask your guest, how many social workers are we short? I'd love to know which country should we be looking at as a shining example in terms of population, the number of social workers. So how many are we short?
So it's very difficult to compare internationally, Pat, because we are one of the only countries in Europe that has a singular child protection system. If you look to the UK or the North, that is part of a wider, attached to other services. So as a child protection system, we are just about to finalise, really for the first time in a public service, a framework for indicating the number of staff that we need relative to the demand. And to give you just a ballpark figure, we would, and that would be indicating to us, the need for about additional 300 frontline staff to meet the need that we see today.
Starting salaries are very low for the staff working for TUSLA. It's an intense job, stressful. The money does not reflect it. Another one, I worked for 3 years as a social worker in TUSLA. It's impossible to keep up with the demands of the caseload. No support and high rates of burnout. Management need to look at how to care for the frontline staff themselves.
I think there's a couple of things there. I think absolutely, Pat, I have just the greatest respect. I've met social workers from all over the country and I see the hours they are working to seek to protect and care and look after for very vulnerable children, working long over the hours that they're expected to work. The issue around pay and conditions, we see that in terms of exit interviews, particularly from the Greater Dublin area. The issues in terms of getting housing, being able to afford accommodation, that's certainly a feature when we look at why people leave those areas. But certainly in terms of the caring, the responding, we've just completed our staff survey for this year. And the learning from that is what informs us to move forward. I'm seeing more people staying. I'm seeing more people coming to TUSLA, but we still need to continue to build and increase the investment in the agency.
Well, I said at the very beginning, it's a very challenging job, a huge set of challenges, but grateful to you, Kate, for coming in. Kate Duggan, who's the CEO of TUSLA.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.